You're listening to The Naked Scientist with Chris Smith and with Hannah Critchlow. And if you would like to join in the discussion, you can email Chris at thenakedscientists.com, tweet at Naked Scientists, or you can join the discussion on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/thenakedscientists.
So why are people with low vitamin D levels at risk of multiple sclerosis? One person who's been studying this extensively and is now urging the government to fortify food in Scotland with vitamin D to protect people is Oxford University neurologist George Ebers. Hello, George.
Hello, Hannah.
Hello. So first of all, can you explain to us what actually is multiple sclerosis?
Well, it's the commonest chronic neurological disease that affects young adults. We think it's autoimmune, and for most people over time, it leads to progressive disability.
Okay, and so why would vitamin D levels be linked to the immune system and also the brain as well?
I think what we can say is that the circumstantial evidence has always been in favor of some relationship between MS risk and sunshine. And going back 50 years ago, we knew that if you were from the British Isles and you moved to Australia or you moved to South Africa, your risk of MS plummeted. It's very clear cut. And so that implicated sunshine even back then. And gradually over time, we've learned that the main biological effects of sunshine are mediated through vitamin D, and evidence has come in, which is now directly implicating vitamin D as a main environmental risk factor in the disease.
And so what kind of evidence has been coming in? Has it been epidemiological studies, for example, the ones that Elena was talking about? And are there all genetic studies as well?
Or? There are. Yeah, it comes from several sources. So that it, just on the epidemiological side, if you look at the fine mapping, if you like, of the distribution of MS in a country like France where people don't move very much, you can show that the pattern of MS occurrence in the various sort of regions of France fits almost exactly the distribution of ultraviolet radiation. And if you take the end of the winter, say February, the end of the winter for France, then in fact the UV radiation map, if you like, which is generated by the satellites that are orbiting the Earth, maps very, very much onto the prevalence of MS by region. That was the epidemiological part. Now the genetics part, of course, has been much more recent, and several things have happened. The main gene region that disposes you to MS turns out to be regulated by vitamin D, and then a number of the small genes that make you susceptible turn out to have a disproportionate regulation by vitamin D. And I suppose the most recent thing is that we've shown that the enzyme, which is the rate-limiting step, the thing that really determines how much active vitamin D you got, turns out to be associated with the risk. In the way we did this, we looked for people who had a deficiency of this enzyme for genetic reasons. They had a mutation in the gene, which markedly reduced the enzyme activity, and we found this was very strongly associated with MS.
And in what way was it associated with MS?
The way we did this is that we searched for parents of MS patients who had one normal gene for the enzyme and then one abnormal gene. And then we looked to see in the MS offspring which they had inherited. Now, the odds are 50-50. They would get the normal gene or the abnormal gene. And we found 35 parents with this defective gene on one side and one of their chromosomes and a normal gene on the other side. And then when we examined the MS offspring, for them to have inherited the abnormal gene all 35 times would be like flipping a coin 35 times and getting 35 heads. And that's exactly what we found. We found that invariably this was transmitted. So this is, maybe the strongest association that's ever been reported in one of these complex diseases. And it's really now making us think in terms of causality rather than association.
And can you now talk about what this gene does, the biochemical studies that link the genes and multiple sclerosis and vitamin D together?
So one of the things that's sort of important to point out is that maybe vitamin D shouldn't have really been called a vitamin anyway. It's really more like a hormone. And so in contrast to something like vitamin E or vitamin A, which is really fulfills the traditional definition of a vitamin, something you take in small amounts externally, important in metabolism. Vitamin D is something, you know, you can make yourself. You regulate it very carefully. And we've had millions of years of evolution to develop strategies for regulating vitamin D. And so the way it works is that you've got the precursor in your skin, as Elena said, and it's acted on by sunshine, ultraviolet radiation. converted to an active form. But there is an important step, an additional step, which is regulated by the enzyme we're just talking about. It's called 1,25-alpha-hydroxylase, and it's the one that converts vitamin D to the active form. And so we have the ability to control vitamin D, and this is going to be relevant to a number of questions, I think, about how much to take and so forth, because in fact, the internal system that we have developed over many, many years actually regulates this very tightly.
And what do you think then about vitamin D supplements in the food?
Well, I've not come to this quickly. I have to say it's over a large number of years. And I think what I've said to the Scottish government, along with a number of other people who are there to advise them, was that we thought that their solution was probably best reached by administering it to the population. And that's taking into account a number of factors, the level of deficiency, the likelihood that it's related to a number of their diseases, and the very, very low risk that's involved, the fact that it's dirt cheap, and so forth. So all those things, not to mention human nature, telling people to take things doesn't always work, as you know. And so that was our conclusion.
Okay, thank you, George. And we might pick up on some of these issues later on in the show. So that was Oxford University neurologist George Ebers.